This episode of the Agency Spark podcast is brought to you by Airborne, a sales engagement platform. Learn more about how to set your team up for success at airborneapp.io. More on Airborne later in the show. Welcome to the Agency Spark podcast. This is your host, Sarah Nay, and today on the show, I have Stu Swineford, co-founder of Relish. So welcome to the show, Stu.
Hi, Sarah. It's good to talk with you.
You as well. So let's start with your story before launching Relish. I believe you started as a copywriter, transitioned to different areas in marketing. So tell me more about that path a bit.
Yeah. So at a very early age, I had a tendency to fall off of things and break a lot of bones. And so my go-to at that time was I really wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. So all through, you know, grade school, high school, junior high, college, I was on the pursuit of being a doctor. And I went to Colorado College in Colorado Springs and was a sociology major with a dual major of pre-med. And when I didn't get into med school the first try, which isn't super abnormal, I was working for a catalog company, a bike company back in the day. So that kind of tells you where how long I've been doing this stuff. I was working as a salesperson at a catalog company waiting to get into med school. And I got into med school and decided that wasn't actually what I wanted to do. So I kept working at the catalog company as a sales guy. And one day the owner came up to me and asked me to go out to lunch for a bike ride with him. And I was like, I don't think they usually fire you at lunch. So hopefully this will be a good thing. And he said, you went to college, you're a pretty smart guy. We need help with copywriting. And would that be of interest to you? And I said, yeah, that sounds great. Writing copy for this company. About 6 weeks after I started that gig, the graphic designer for the company just stopped showing up. She quit. And we had a catalog that needed to get out in about 6 weeks. And people were nervous about the fact that no one knew what was going on there. And so I raised my hand again and just said, hey, I know how to turn on the Mac. I think I can figure this out. And so I quickly, at the age of about 23, found myself as the kind of the director of marketing for one of the top three bike catalog companies in the nation. And it was exciting. I continued to write the copy. I was managing a small team, putting things together and learning and designing a catalog. Built my first website in the mid-90s for that company and moved on to bigger and better things. I really went to work for a couple of design agencies, ad agencies, rode that kind of dot-com boom and bust up through the late 90s. And essentially, at some point, I'd found myself managing a team. We were doing actual WAP development, so web application development, back in the kind of early to mid-2000s, before smartphones were a thing. And at that point, I had done everything. I'd done everything from running a team to QA, QC, to development, to design. And I guess I lost my mind and decided I could do this on my own. So a friend and I set off to create an agency in 2007. And we rolled that into Relish Studio in 2008 and have been going strong ever since with Relish.
What were some of the challenges from leaving the corporate world, having a team in place, having structure, to then all of a sudden going out on your own and launching something from step one and growing and scaling it?
There were a lot of challenges. Certainly the economy at that time was not awesome. It was an election year, which historically we found to be not fantastic in terms of people wanting to invest in marketing. I think the hurdles early on were trying to figure out who was doing what. We had four partners at the time. We're down to two now, which is actually a pretty comfortable number. Making sure that we had all of the elements covered and everyone was doing what they were best at. That tends to be a challenge when there are a lot of cooks in the kitchen. There tends to be some overlap and some challenges there. And then really, it's mostly just learning how to get comfortable with the discomfort of running a business. You're wearing so many hats, you're doing so many things all the time. And I think that piece is one of the bigger challenges, really. We had a pretty good network base at the time. So we were getting a lot of business just through word of mouth and then referrals and then just keeping our foot on the gas with consistency, trying to just get out there and be valuable.
Absolutely. I think that's a common challenge for people when they're just getting started and really growing and building teams is making sure that you really are focusing on the things that you're best at and what you're meant to do versus just doing everything because you can.
Yeah, it's really a challenge because I think a lot of people tend to think, does this make me money? Mm-hmm. And that's a great place to start. But at the same time, you need to figure out how to free yourself up to make that money. And so one of the exercises that I continue to try to do on a regular basis is really assess if I'm doing something that I enjoy and that I'm really good at and that no one else can do, then keep doing it. And if any of those things are not true, then start looking for help and figure out who could do this more effectively so that it frees up my time to continue to focus on those things that are most valuable for Relish Studio and our clients.
I think that's a great point. Things that you're good at, but also you enjoy doing. I think people often forget about the enjoy doing element, but if you enjoy doing it, you're just going to continue to be great at it versus if you're doing it because you have to.
Yeah.
You might not be as successful at what you're working at.
Yeah. And there are certainly some things that I'm not best at that I really still do enjoy. And so I make sure that I carve out a little bit of time for me to continue to do those things. But for sure, if it's something that I'm not best at and I don't enjoy, then I'm looking for someone else to help out.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about today for you. You focus with Relish Studio on purposeful, conversion-focused digital marketing strategy and execution. So can you tell me more about that focus?
Yeah, so we try to work with purpose-driven business leaders. So people who have something that is a little bit more than just making money. We really are trying to help people who are trying to help the world. So whether those are B Corps or nonprofits or just businesses like Relish that have some sort of purpose-driven component to them. So we're a 1% for the planet partner, where 1% of our top line revenue goes back to environmental causes. Just having something that's a little bit more than just how am I going to get my next Porsche or something like that. Those are the kind of people that we really like to help. And so that's the first piece of that. And then really focusing on conversion. Having a website is great. Investing in marketing is certainly something that we encourage people to do, but we also really look at it from an investment framework or from that lens. We really want to create opportunities for people to get a return on that investment. Just building a site isn't really enough. We need that site to actually do something and create opportunity for our clients. And so those are the things that we're really focused on in our business. And we do that a number of different ways. And the first way is really assessing needs. And a lot of times people will come to us and say, I need a new website or I need an email campaign or something like that. And we like to start with strategy first to make sure that everybody has a good understanding of what the goals are. And so we have that kind of North Star and that everyone's rowing in the same direction so that we're not just throwing things at the wall and seeing what happens without any real understanding of why it even might be working, but there's a plan in place and there's a real strong understanding of what that return on the investment should be and how to get there.
Absolutely. Let's talk about, you mentioned two, a couple items there. So let's start with your clients that you like to work with and then Sure. We'll talk more about your strategy. And so the clients that are out there doing good, they're making a difference in the world. How do you qualify them as someone that you would like to work with? So someone reaches out, because a lot of the questions I get when someone's starting to set up their agency and focus on some niche of some sort, it's how do I qualify and make sure those clients are going to actually be a good fit? So obviously that they're out there, that they're purpose driven, but is there anything else that you're looking for as part of your client qualification process?
Yeah, that's a great question. And some of these are some things are measurable and other things are a little fuzzier for sure. So one of the things that we do is we just have a set of questions that I like to get answers for when we first start onboarding. And some of those questions are pretty direct in terms of what's your mission? What are you trying to accomplish? Where are you trying to go? And just the answers to those can get a lot of information in terms of that conversion or in terms of that purpose focus. What's your team ethos? What are your values and vision? And so those are some questions that we ask up front, but really coming up with a set, what I would recommend for anyone out there embarking on any sort of business is to get a feel for who your ideal clients are. And as you start, obviously, you need some experience in working with some people to figure that out. But what we tend to do on a regular basis for our clients and also for ourselves is run kind of this 80-20. And there's a name for it, and I always forget the name. But essentially, you look at your clients over some period of time through a variety of lenses and looking at who's contributing to the most profit, who's contributing to the most revenue, what are some of the characteristics of those people that you like working with the most. And so sorting your client roster a variety of different ways. And essentially what falls out of that is a lot of times that about 20% of the people you work with represent about 80% of the value to your business in terms of happiness or, you know, or revenue, or, you know, hopefully we're looking at profits as well. And so once you start with that exercise, you can really dig into what are the characteristics of these people that made them so much fun to work with or made them so profitable, and start looking for people who have similar characteristics. And those are some of the exercises that we go through to try and figure that out.
Thanks for sharing that exercise. I do think it's a really great thing to keep in mind on a regular basis. A lot of times when people are, again, just getting started in the agency space, the marketing space, and they have no idea who their niche is, I recommend exactly what you're sharing. Start with maybe a little bit more broad of a group than you think, and really pay attention over the next year, 2, 3 years as to who are your best clients, who are most profitable, who make you the happiest to work with, who can you get the best results for, and really track and pay attention to those things and continue to narrow your focus to work with more people like that as you learn more over the years. So I think that's a great exercise to do on a regular basis, I would say.
Yeah, we try to go back to that and explore it on a yearly basis, really looking at how did the last year go? How does that track to our 12-year history, et cetera? And it's fun to see what falls out of that. I think the other challenge, in particularly when you're just starting up, is chasing money. And certainly we all need to do projects, but the quicker you can figure out what are the best projects for you to do, even when you're letting stuff go, leaving money, even not necessarily leaving money on the table, but when projects come your way that are not a good fit and you go ahead and chase them anyway, what all that does is it creates a situation where you might not do a great job. So the client may not be happy, which isn't fantastic for your growing business. It also keeps you from doing great work in the places that you do excel, because it takes away time from the opportunity to do those projects. And so this is a real tough lesson, and it comes back to like fear of missing out. But at the end of the day, the more quickly you can really nail what you're best at and just do as much of that work as possible, the better.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've been with Duct Tape for 11 years now and do a lot of our sales for our consulting work. And just the other week, like a couple of weeks ago, I was doing that exactly. I was trying to chase this project that didn't even make sense for us. And it was going to be this big time suck for me and take my attention away from some of our other priorities and goals that we had laid out. But it's sometimes hard to say, even after doing this for 11 years, it's sometimes hard to say no to projects when the money is there and in front of your face. So I think that's a great reminder. It is easy to get off course. And so staying focused is really important.
Yeah, revenue is always great. And sometimes those projects that don't seem like a good fit turn into something that is. However, just keeping that in the back of one's mind is important, I think, because you can pretty quickly find yourself working on a bunch of things that you really don't like and that aren't really going to contribute to your agency growth. And it's not really a joke. It's also the thing that we look at, and it's, does this make us money? Does this make us happy? And is this something that we could show? And if we can get two of those, then that's good. If we can get all three of those, then that's great. If we're just chasing one of those, then we need to really start to assess whether or not that's the best use of our time.
And now a word from our sponsor, Airborne. Sales engagement platforms are fundamental to the modern tech stack. Airborne delivers everything you would expect from a sales engagement platform, and then some. Get the most out of every interaction and make your team more effective with Airborne. Learn more about how to set up your team for success at airborneapp.io. Now, back to the show.
I want to shift our conversation a little bit, because I know you've worked a lot in the nonprofit space over the years, and I've worked with a handful of nonprofit clients myself. What do you think are some of the differences when you're helping a nonprofit market versus a for-profit company?
Well, a lot of times, and you hear the model of a funnel in the for-profit space where you just dump people in the top of the funnel and some amount are going to move to the middle of the funnel and some amount are going to move to the bottom of the funnel, create a sale opportunity. And so the idea is you just start dumping more people. Once you get that kind of figured out, you just start dumping more people into the top of the funnel and you have a fairly high level of predictability that a certain number are going to come out the bottom and become clients or sales. In the nonprofit space, one of the things that we see is that it's really more of an uphill battle. There's friction all the way through this process. And so you have to continue to overcome this friction of, you know, most people don't wake up in the morning and say, I want to see how I can give away some of my money today or my time for that matter. And so there's just this added level of friction all throughout that process. And so you're not getting people to part with their money necessarily to get some tangible thing at the end of that process. And so there's just a lot of barriers to overcome as you try and ooch people up that mountain of that process, as opposed to, you know, feeling like there's just this gravity situation where you just continue to drop people in the top and then they come out the bottom. I'd say that's the biggest thing, is there's just an extra layer of kind of angst or anxiety or friction that you have to continue to battle as you nurture those stakeholders through that process.
And do you have any recommendations on how you've helped ease some of that friction?
Well, one way is to just hyper-optimize all of your materials. Make sure that your landing pages are completely dialed in, that they continue to sell. One of the things that we noticed works pretty well for profit landing pages is to really remove as many distractions as possible, where in the nonprofit space, you really need to continue to encourage people that this is the right decision to make. For example, on a donation page, it usually takes a little more copy on those pages for nonprofits than for profits. It takes a little bit more just continuing to reinforce that the people are making the right decision, where in a for-profit space, the pot of gold is kind of right there. And you get that dopamine hit after you've, or that happy feeling after you've made the sale because the thing is coming. But in a nonprofit space, it's actually reversed. It's like you have to get them. Actually, I misstated that. The hit is actually after you collect the donation, the money in a for-profit scenario. So you pay the money and then you get this thing and then it's, yay, I got the thing. But in a nonprofit space, it's really that switch that gets flipped that says, I'm going to make this decision. That's when the good feeling comes. And then you have to get them to continue the process to go ahead and make a donation. So it's an interesting change in that dynamic that you have to figure out how to overcome.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So, you know, a lot of what we talk about at Duct Tape Marketing is the whole customer journey, marketing hourglass, getting people to know, like, trust, try, buy, repeat, refer. And so it sounds like in the nonprofit space, really establishing that trust before they're ready to actually put their money forward is really important.
Yeah, it is. And there are some ways to play in that try buy zone in the nonprofit space. So certainly one of the things that we like to try to help people do is escalate an engagement. So you can get someone to maybe donate their time and then try and get them to donate money, or even the opposite. You can get them to donate money and then donate time. And that may actually fall into that repeat phase in terms of the hourglass, but it's all mixed into that repeat and refer element. Is if you can get people to believe in what your nonprofit is doing and then be willing to donate, you know, their time and or money, a lot of times it's just continuing to keep them in the loop. And that's a place where I think almost all businesses have opportunity, is in the refer phase, which we call it that ignite phase.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Stu. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really loved catching up with you today. If anyone listening would like to connect with you online, where can they find you?
They can always find me at relishstudio.com. That's R-E-L-I-S-H studio.com. I'm also always available on LinkedIn. Just search for my name, S-T-U Swineford, S-W-I-N-E-F-O-R-D. And I also have a podcast called Relish This, which is a nonprofit podcast for trying to help nonprofits figure out their marketing. So if that sounds like an interesting thing, feel free to check that out wherever you find podcasts.
Awesome. And I got to let you know before I let you go today that I actually just ordered a new mountain bike and it showed up last night. So we'll have to chat about that offline more.
Yeah, you're a lucky person. Those are hard to come by these days.
They are. I'm really excited. Well, thank you all for listening to Agency Spark Podcast. This is your host, Sarah Nay, and we'll see you next time.